build capacity, knowledge, experience. We have to reduce barriers to do it. And it is effective. It's highly effective. And cultural fire, too, carried out by indigenous people. That's what these landscapes were stewarded through. It was the food security through burning. So we do have to get back to those practices, and they do work.
Well, we want to thank you very much for being with us. Of course, we'll continue to cover this. Bob Gray, wildland fire ecologist, fire suppression expert, currently speaking to us from Chilliwack, British Columbia. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, and Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, and Dennis McCormick. If you'd like to sign up for our
Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
On the next episode of Voices for the Animals, we'll look into the case of a goat, a girl, and the rise of more compassionate and humane alternatives to 4-H agricultural programs. We'll be speaking with Danielle Hanisch, Executive Director of LEAP, Leaders for Ethics, Animals, and the Planet. It's a program that offers students the farm animal care experience and opportunities of 4-H without the selling of those animals for slaughter, which can traumatize many kids.
These kids were, 14, 15, 16 years old and just realizing, like someone flipped a switch that, oh my gosh, these animals are no different than my dogs and cats at home. They have feelings, they have personalities. And now I'm knee-deep in this program and I don't think that there's another option and I have to betray my friend who I have cared for.
We've got your goat on the next Voices for the Animals, airing Friday, August 25th at 10 a.m. right here on 90.7 KBOO FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. Masks and proof of vaccination are required at this time. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held. KBOO.
Good morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. That's 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. We are broadcasting on this Monday, the 21st of August. It is shortly after 8 a.m. and I am Cecil, and I am here with
Celeste and Strange. You just laid that out so smoothly.
Thank you.
Yes, the KBOO and the ether, www.kboo.fm. You can hear us worldwide. So we are happy to see you, as well as we can see each other through that haze. Red sunshine in the morning.
Yeah, I had to stop and take some more pictures yesterday and today.
Uh-huh. Well, it's all that haze from the smoke we've got all kinds of wildness going on in the climate and in our community. Our community further south, really. Because, to be honest, San Diego is not exactly Portland. So it's not a suburb.
So I had a friend that posted that Hurricane Hillary had all the momentum as the 2016 Clinton campaign.
I was waiting on somebody to throw out a meme for that. Seriously. Especially after the earthquake.
Yes, my cousin called me. She said, "We're preparing for the hurricane. We just had an earthquake." Ah.
Well, somebody opened the Pandora's box. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, you can't.
I'm going to leave it like that.
I remember my sister reminded me that the old TV commercial, "You can't fool with Mother Nature."
Hello?
Mother Nature is not pleased with humanity.
Well, not pleased with Florida either, because not only did they have that giant sargassum wave of sea vegetation earlier in the year, and then, you know, the die-off, and then the boiling water, then they got leprosy. So, you know, hey, I don't know.
Yes.
But anyway, let's circle closer to home. We regret to inform you that our guests are not going to be here today. Our plan was to have the committee, the engagement committee, community engagement committee chairs of the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing to come and talk a little bit about the committee and its work, and then encourage people to be a part of it. And full disclosure, I am one of the co-chairs of the effort. And just very, very, very briefly, it is a committee that was formed as part of the settlement agreement from the suit that was brought against Portland, Oregon, with regards to its treatment of people having mental health crises and the Portland Police Bureau's treatment of those folks. And it was found that Portland exercised undue force, you know, and did not handle people with the necessary respect and care. And the Department of Justice and its findings decided that one way to improve that was to increase community engagement with the police. And this is a court sanction, and so this committee has existed in different incarnations, and I'm not going to get real deep into it. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage people to go to portlandoregon.gov and look up PCCEP and find more information. And we are in the midst of our recruitment phase. Now, basically, your job is to work with taking the input from the community about various police activities or policies and trying to distill those into recommendations with the help of appointed members like myself and the Community Engagement Committee. And so if that sounds like something you are interested in, I would encourage you to go to the website and take a look. And on the KABU website is also some very brief information under the More Talk Radio page. So please do get involved. It's really important for Portland to move ahead in its relationships with the community and the police. Excuse me. And some of the work we've done most recently is to hold a series of town halls to discuss the past rollout of a pilot program using gunshot detection technology. And as some of you may know, the mayor withdrew that project. And while we can't definitively say it was because of the input that the public, the community, you offered, we can say that we did elevate the voices. so that those voices were heard of communities that were not interested in having that technology but wanted other ways of addressing gunshots and gun violence in the Portland metro area. So it's meaningful work, it's substantive work, and you can find out more by going to www.portlandoregon.gov and search for P as in Paul, C as in Charlie, C, E as in Evan, P. And hopefully you'll be inspired to apply for committee service.
Great. Thank you so much. And that is so important work. Thank you, Celeste. And we look forward to an opportunity to speak with representatives sometime soon in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So stay tuned, stay informed. And as Celeste suggested, you can go to our website and you can see the link and find ways in which you may be become involved in this. So.
Okay. So now we're going to do a pivot.
pivot. Yeah. So we're doing a pivot because we had to do, like, in last, 10 minutes ago, I had to say, okay, we have to change our program.
Yep, and dig back in our little bag of tricks and pull out some of the things that we talked about, maybe talking about, and bringing to you or not. And one of the things that we decided we wanted to share, because while both of us have been exchanging memes and articles about it, we did not weigh in on the air on what has been, how do we say this? Okay, let me just say it this way. Which has been colloquially known as the Sweet Tea Battle of Montgomery.
That's one name.
Uh-huh. That's one name. And it's picked up a couple of others. Now, what was the article you had sent me? I think it was last week. The Alabama Brawl.
Alabama Brawl, yeah. You know, and there's plenty of memes all around.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of memes. Now, some people maybe have not even heard about it. That's entirely possible.
That's entirely possible and completely understandable. Mm-hmm. Because if you are not on some social media site, I assume that it had to be covered by, like, broadcast news eventually and picked it up, because certainly the memes were all over social media. And people of some serious thought reflected on it and what it meant for our nation and where we are going. So,
well, where we're going, if we're going to make it
there,
too.
Where we are, yeah.
If we're going to make it anywhere. So let's see, can we do a brief synopsis of this and then kind of give our views on it and kind of encourage people to talk about it? You know, should we do a brief synopsis?
Okay, well, and we'll try it, because, and again, we haven't talked about this until 2 minutes ago. So I'm
well,
not
on
sure.
The radio, yeah.
So I'm not sure you're, okay, let's see. What is your understanding of what happened in Alabama a couple of weeks ago?
I love the way you put that. Okay, so this is my understanding. There was a riverboat that normally took people out on cruises. Okay, and basically, when the boat came in.
Do 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 toot toot coming in.
To dock at his regular spot, there was a boat there.
What?
And yeah, in its regular space.
In its spot.
Yeah, okay. In its designated spot. Designated is the key word.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. And this took place on a Saturday in August 5th here, in Montgomery, Alabama. So attempts were made to raise the owners. The owners decided that they did not want to move their boat. And so they ignored all requests to do so. Okay. So a staff agent, member,
yeah.
The co-captain of the ship, incidentally called the Harriet, spelled, I think, the same way you spell Marriott, except with an H, went on the deck, was boated to the deck to move the boat. Well, while this man tried to move the boat, the owners came out and decided that they didn't like that, and hit the co-captain. And that's when all proverbial hell broke loose.
Okay. And you said it very nicely. They hit the captain. Well, okay. Mm-hmm. So they got hit. The captain got hit. There was this mob of people approaching him, and you know, and this person was sort of holding his own. Correct. So,
well, he said he was holding on for dear life.
For dear life.
So yeah, I guess he was holding on to something.
but then this is where, okay, it, and then people are watching.
Right.
People on the riverboat. People all over. People with their cameras on, and people were watching and reacted. Now, I don't know. Now, this may be apocryphal, but I did see the photo where it's sort of like he threw his hat up in the air.
Yes.
And that was almost like a signal.
It was a signal.
I just didn't know it. for the cavalry to come. Well, that's probably not an accurate term because of American history.
No, it was the infantry.
Because
it was foot soldiers.
Foot soldiers.
Okay, we're getting too far ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
Because I know people are saying, huh? Cavalry in Alabama? What's going on down there?
Okay.
Infantry. So let us back up a little bit. And there's some key elements that we did not state.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So the co-captain who had been dispatched from the tour boat, the Harriet, to the dock happened to be a black man.
Okay.
And the owners of the boat who he was trying to move, were white families. Okay, and I think they were all related and a couple of friends. So when he tried to remove this boat after asking them to move it, he was attacked by these men. One man ran up and hit him in his face. And then the man, the co-captain, his name is, last name is Pickett. Mr. Pickett threw his hat up in the air. And about that time, the rest of the family and friends came over and started attacking him. So according to the videos that you see taken from various folks on the dock and people on the riverboat, the Harriet, you see a lone middle-aged black man getting beat up by a bunch of white guys. And then suddenly it was on.
It was on.
Yeah.
And the infantry, the
yep.
But it was sort of like the bat signal.
Yes, the hat throwing up in the air was like the bat signal. That's what people are saying. Okay. Yeah. And so now to kind of quicken the story a little bit, the guys who started the fight have been arrested. And I think a fourth one was just arrested a little bit ago. But this thing sent shockwaves through the world, and people were just blown away because, for one thing, it was another incident of racialized violence, and that's always sad because you don't want any group of people pitted against each other. You know, it's bad enough we're pitted for resources,
And why it's racialized because of American history.
Yes.
And it's Montgomery, Alabama.
Yes.
And it is at a place where enslaved persons were sold.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of history there.
Yes, and because the attackers were white and the black co-captains' rescuers were black, it had that extra dimension of race.
Yeah, but, well, it's, you know, and race, and like I said, it was the bat signal, because we haven't even mentioned Aquaman coming.
No, I hadn't even got there yet.
Okay.
So you get a chance to say, because you mentioned him, so go ahead.
Well,
and then we'll tell everybody what we want to talk about.
I became aware of it when someone shared information with me about Aquaman, and I had no idea what they were talking about this young man swimming in the river.
Yes,
jump off the boat to help the guy who was under attack, and he had been called Aquaman, and there's all sorts of memes all over the place about it, but it included, as you suggested, it became a ball. Many people were involved in it, and as Celeste reminded us, it was racialized, but I think it's symbolic of tensions within our society as a whole.
Well, they're being exacerbated by groups that want to start a civil war, have been doing their best to provoke and pique the black community into an armed response and not getting it. Now, I'm not saying these guys are part of that.
No.
But that's what has been creating the tension overall. That meta tension plays on the historical challenges and well, hey, let me just call it what it is, the historical oppression that a lot of black folks in America have experienced. So there have been jokes coming out of that which have lightened the severity of this event. And there's been recognitions coming out of that, and there's been conversations coming out of that. The response between black and white communities has not been as divided and has not been as hostile as one might consider, one might think. Because just as they have Civil War reenactments and other event reenactments, there have been comical reenactments of what has been called the Sweet Tea Battle of Montgomery. And for those of you who don't know why Sweet Tea would enter into it in any way, shape, or form, you got to understand that for many Southerners, that is the drink of choice over water.
And it is sweet tea.
Just Google it. I'm not going to explain it beyond that.
And also, it you know, it's more than a source of humor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and this is from people I've spoken to and conversations I've had, it, for many black people, something resonated well, much like this young man who jumped into the river to swim over to come to the assist of the guy who was under attack, as well as, you know, the memes. We haven't even mentioned the folding chair, but but I think for many people, it was symbolic of where we are as a country and as a people in terms of being under siege and the necessity of people to rise up and protect their family members and people who are under attack. And so while we are laughing and making jokes about it and memes, I think it's, as Celeste suggested, is symbolic of an ongoing historical division within the United States that has been heightened by voices, and I'll say racist voices.
Yeah.
It's not sort of like it's even on both sides. No, it's racist voices which have sought to divide this, continue to divide this nation. And we see this play out in the presidential campaign, in this whole talk around CRT, and on and on and on. And I think this video for many people said, like, this is symbolic of where we are as a nation, and it is time for people people who have been oppressed to come together and defend themselves.
Yes. So in it has had a contradictory effect in many ways, because it has brought people together. When I spoke about the comical reenactments, well, you've got in these reenactments, white protagonists or antagonists and black protagonists. But outside of the reenactment, these are friends coming together to act it out. And the first time I saw one of the comical reenactments, it not only made me laugh, but it made me have a really surprising kind of warm feeling, because basically the black and white groups had to come together as friends and figure out what, how they were going to block out and choreograph the battle. And you can see that they are having fun with each other in the midst of this. There's no animosity. It's the whole reason for getting together is to create a light moment, to make fun of it, to have fun.
Really? I haven't seen
those. Oh, you haven't seen those? Oh, my goodness. You got to find some of the reenactments. Because there was one by a swimming pool that had me cracking up. Because there was the pretend hit with the folding chair and what have you. So I think had it not been for that, I would have had a whole different attitude.
I see. Okay. Oh, wow. And anything more about the folding chair? You know, I don't think we should. Well, because I'm, and this is, yeah. I don't think we should be talking about gun control as much as,
chair control.
Chair control, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's what we need. You know, I'm no good because I made a meme. I was driving somewhere in Southeast Portland and I saw these two chairs on the corner that somebody had put out. You know how we do here in Portland, free,
yes,
you know,
everything.
Which basically means my garbage, is it your trash? I mean, is it your treasure?
Your treasure, right.
You know, and I took a picture of them and I said that they were veterans. Please support veterans of the Sweet Tea Battle of Montgomery. And they look pretty bedraggled. One of them was a folding chair, too, with this, you know, part of its seat torn out. So I just, you know, okay. But anyway, when we mention the folding chairs, guys, I got to put some of this in context for folks. I know some of you are thinking, I'm turning this off. You ain't making no sense, Jack. Basically, when the co-captain, Captain Pickett, was attacked, and people came to his rescue, somebody grabbed a folding chair and used it as a weapon against some of the aggressors. And that is why the chair has been elevated to its high exalted status.
It could be a deadly weapon, gosh.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not carrying any down the street because I'm not stupid. I know where I am.
Okay.
Wow. I'm a black woman in America. They're not going to believe me when I said it, but I'm going to my family reunion now.
That's right.
They said, BYOC, bring your own chair.
Bring your own chair. That's right. Well,
you know,
well, I have a permit to carry folding chair, so I'm good.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, hey, I'm impressed with your foresightedness. But anyway, what we want to do is invite people in. You know, have you seen it? If you haven't seen it, don't call. You know, because it may only frustrate you what we have to say. But how many of you were able to pull out something similar, like I was saying, about the reenactments, and see in the midst of this really terrible, ugly event, something funny, a chance for reconciliation in the midst of this. You know, for some of us, yes, this is still a horrific thing that happened. And for many people who saw it, not only were they horrified, but some people might have felt justified, you know, or validated. And it had a lot of mixed emotions. And I know for some folks that are trying to keep up, maybe this is overdone, but this is a critical moment in our history, especially like what I said, when you found communities, black and white communities, getting together and making humorous memes and videos of it. In other words, kind of transmuting the ugliness of this whole experience into something that was going to be a bridge builder.
And before we go to our callers, and let me remind you, our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. Shortly after the incident, Stephen Reed, the mayor of Montgomery, happens to be African-American, issued this statement: last night, the Montgomery Police Department acted swiftly to detain several reckless individuals for attacking a man who was doing his job. Warrants are being signed and justice will be served. This was an unfortunate incident which never should have occurred. As our police department investigates these intolerable actions, we should not become desensitized to violence of any kind to our community. Those who choose violent actions will be held accountable by our criminal justice system, Mayor Stephen L. Reed of Montgomery, Alabama. So let's go to our caller. Corey, good morning. Your thoughts, sir?
Hey, good morning. Glad to hear from you, too. Yeah, I saw it when it happened, and I have seen some of the memes, and I did think it was funny. I am from a small town in the South, and I think at the same time when this was going on about, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, I think his name is Jason Aldean, came out with the song, said, you know, talking about try that in a small town.
Oh, like, yes. Yes.
Yeah, but exactly. Try that in a small town. Yeah, because I'll fight you. Because mm-hmm. I am from a small town in Texas, and there's just the point. And here's the funny part. Like, I grew up in a small town. It was pretty integrated. A lot of Latino people and white people. And there are times where, you know, this was an incident where the football quarterback was a white guy, called the black guy the N-word. And like, okay, the black guys are going to fight the white guys. Like, there's a time when you just got to, like, look, you did something wrong. And when he threw that hat up, that was like the bad signal. Like, it's time to roll. And so, yeah, he came up with that song. Like, yeah, try that in a small town. Like, you, if you get caught up in the wrong place, something like that will happen. I will say this, living in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm not trying to be funny, I wonder if that would have happened here. And I say that living in Seattle and having lived in Portland, I wonder if people would have backed that man up. Because I'm, you know, being a Southerner, I'm always going to have people's backs that are of my affinity group, whether you're black, whether you're a veteran. But I've seen something here recently in Seattle where, not to that effect, but where, you know, a white person was yelling at a black person and the black people just kind of scattered. And I was just like, well, hold up, like, the white person is in the wrong. And I just like to fight anyway, so let me stand up for this person, et cetera, et cetera. So I do think it's cultural. Like you said, the sweet tea. Like, yeah, being in the South, you know, being from the South, like, yeah, that was. And once again, what the people were doing, they were wrong. They shouldn't have attacked that man. So,
not
yeah,
even. That's right.
Right.
Well,
exactly. So it's
white privilege.
A lot of cultural touch points. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was just commenting on they should not have attacked that man. And it occurs to me it was just symbolic of white privilege.
Exactly. And to attack that man and think they can get away with it. And how dare you? And it goes back, how dare you question me? We're all three of us are grown black folks that have lived in this country. So how dare X question Y? And it's like, well, we'll question you and we'll also fight you. And so it's just the fact that Jason Aldean wrote that song, and I think it was so interesting that, like, yeah, I'm from a small town, and you forget that we can also fight back. And I think that's the issue, like the fact that these black people had the audacity to fight back. How dare you type situation. So, like, yeah, it was still interesting. The memes have been very hilarious. But, yeah, I still wonder, like, if everybody would have done that. Or was that just a strictly Southern thing? I don't know. I'm not trying to be funny about the Pacific Northwest. I still live here. But, yeah, there was an incident at a cafe recently where something like that was happening similar, and everybody just kind of scattered. I'm like, well, hold up. Like, you know, I think people are worried, am I going to get sued? Is this going to go viral?
And yeah. Hey, let me throw this in here. because we talked about Jason Aldean's song back, I think it was the last week of July before this happened. And one of the things that, one of the contexts that I use is I had just traveled cross country from here to Missouri. And I was marveling at, although Aldean's song painted, you know, the United States is really divided, I was treated surprisingly well in a lot of places traveling through Idaho and Utah and Wyoming and Colorado and Kansas. Now, I did remark that I didn't hardly see any black people until I got to Missouri, you know, a few in Kansas and then, you know, mostly in Missouri. And that was a little noteworthy, especially when I was in Telluride, because I didn't see it. I think I saw one black person beside me. But, you know, the point is that, you know, Aldean's song has been, it's been characterized as dog whistle, you know, signal to racist, white racist. And, you know, I want to say that even though this was a battle between whites and blacks, some of the memes have been a dog whistle for solidarity to anyone who cares about injustice, you know? And because I've seen commentary from white folks on YouTube basically expressing solidarity with the boat captain, Mr. Pickett, Captain Pickett, because they also, like you pointed out aptly, said, well, those folks were wrong. What was wrong with them? You know, I don't know, Corey. On one hand, I think it's because we don't have a critical mass up here. And we don't trust Oregon and Washington, because after all, Oregon itself, the whole state tried to be a sundown state. Let's just be honest. It tried to be a sundown state. And in many ways, the black population in Portland, and maybe Seattle, I haven't lived there, so I don't know, was terrorized by that. Because there was a law on the books here in Oregon that you couldn't have free or enslaved Negroes. And if you had one, you know, that person would be quote unquote set free and told to go. And if you didn't leave, you could be whipped every 6 months until you left. You could be. Exactly. So nobody knew when they might or might not be whipped. And that's terrorism.
Exactly. And I think that's historic, and that's historically. And I think for me, like, you know, I am a Southerner. I am a veteran. I'm in law enforcement. Now I'm, you know, I have a PhD. I'm a professional man, but I'm still from the country. And so when I saw that video, like, yeah, there's, you know, that's.
Oh, so you know this, you know, there's hat signal then, because I did not know the hat signal. I'm from the Midwest now.
Exactly. Sometimes you got to forget all the, you know, I'm a professional black man in Seattle. Like, no, sometimes you just got to roll. So I'll leave it like that. I'll talk to y'all later.
All righty. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
And putting it into another context, you know.
And so thank you, Corey, for sharing your thoughts and your perspectives. We have another caller online. And
good morning, Santiago. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Hey, I'm looking at this cloudy Monday, and I'm thinking, what am I going to do with this beautiful day?
That's what I'm saying. It's been, I'm so glad it cooled down. anyway, yeah, regarding the Sweet Pea battle, I would have to say that, you know, for me, it was pretty cathartic. You know, I don't know. Most people, when they hear me talk about things, they think that I'm like, I've been accused more than once of hating white people. Mm-hmm. So it's like, but you know, the thing for me is like you said, it comes down to historical tensions. I don't think that would have played out the way it played out had there not been the cultural tensions in place, and certainly not the type of reception that it's been given from the popular media. Cause I mean, let's be honest. I mean, as crazy as it was, like, there was no serious property damage to anything. You know, it was just a bunch of people duking it out. But, you know, like, they don't give the same type of coverage or negativity when white folks win a hockey game or a baseball game and tear up their town. You know, they consider that a party.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh, you know, it's a bit of a fracas, but it's all in good fun, folks. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I find it's like black and brown folks, but since we're talking about the sweet tea battle, when black folks fight back, it's always like, oh, I could never, this is unheard of, you know, kind of like this sort of like flabbergasting. But it's like the truth of the matter is, you know, that you can't, there's only so much oppression people can take, and you just never know what that last little bit is going to cause to slip. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, for me, it was just watching it. It was the audacity of it all, because, I mean, how are you going to punch somebody in the face over, like, you taking a parking spot that doesn't belong to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like you get in trouble for parking in a handicapped spot, and then you're surprised when the handicapped person can throw hands for some reason. You know
or
what
will,
I mean?
Like, or will throw just, hands, you know?
Yeah.
Or will.
It's like you just don't. You know, it's the fact that they thought that he wasn't going to fight back, or that they were all going to take him down and everybody was just going to stand around. But, you know, people showed up and they showed out. They brought their chairs, you know. Shirley Chisholm said, you know, if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. And the folding chairs were brought. There was a table to be sat at. So, I mean, I find some humor in the memes, only in the fact that it's like, because it was sort of decided culturally at some point that a wrong had been committed, that it was easier for people to get on black folks' side. But, you know, before that, it was like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying it's every white person, but as a culture, they were decidedly against it before they realized they were going to be outnumbered and out-cultured. And I think more importantly, it'd be nice to see white folks show up for more than just memes. You know what I mean? I had a friend who posted, you know, it's like, you know, she was upset seeing white people posting memes about it because, like, you know, she's black and queer, and, you know, she does a lot of good stuff in the community. And to her, it hurt her heart because she didn't, you know, it's like, well, where are you when other things are happening? You know, it's easy to jump in on the bandwagon when you know when it's safe for you.
Yeah.
But where are you when it's not safe? You know, as somebody said, you know, if you aren't feeling the flack of the marginalized, then you're not standing close enough as an ally. And I think that's what it comes down to. It's easy to jump on the bandwagon when you know you're in the right, you're not going to be punished for it. But where are you when you know you're going to get punished for it, but you do it anyway?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and I mean, I'm not to take away from what you and Cecil are gleaning from the memes and the reenactments, but I think that's really important to remember is that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that happens all the time. There's a lot. I mean, there's still black folks getting lynched and finding them hanging from trees even now.
There's a young boy taking out the trash and getting arrested because he so-called fit the description.
That's what I'm saying. You know, it's like, you know, but you know, black boys and black girls are adultified, you know, far before they even recognize what being an adult is. And they're accused of adult things before they can even understand what those things are. And
yeah, exactly.
I just, that's what I really kind of feel from it is it's like, cause I know the feeling. It's like a Paul Rodriguez would say, you know, he'd say, you know, you love our culture, you love our food, you love our women, you love our music, but you don't love us.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, we see that all the time. I mean, There's no American culture without black culture. You know,
yes.
Black culture was a product of white supremacy, and it was like a
right.
you know something right. where we're you know where people are supposed oh. to go to oh.
Okay, you know, Santiago.
Like, it wasn't.
No, we thank you because you always bring all of the receipts, and we appreciate that.
before you go, Santiago, I'm sure you appreciate this, that today, August 21st, on this date, George Jackson's life was murdered by San Quentin prison guards. On this day in 1831, Nat Turner led the most successful revolt against slavery in the American history. And on this day in 1791, the Haitian Revolution began.
I was just going to say
that.
Yes. Yes.
So, black power, black liberation.
Yeah, so the struggle continues.
The struggle continues.
That's right. Thank you for your call.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Today is the 21st of August. It is 8:44 a.m. I am Cecil.
I am Celeste. And you can call us at 503-231-8187. And share, you know, what you've learned or noticed about the Montgomery Sweet Tea Battle. I'm going to call it that.
Montgomery
I'm just going to call
sweet
it
Sweet Tea Battle.
You know, and having viewed any of the memes or the comical reactments, you know, what does it bring for you? And like I said, I'm trying to pull the elements that are bridge building, you know, or connectors in a positive sense out of this, because that's a healing.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that I mentioned earlier was in terms of the Aquaman. You know, this young man. I'm going to the defense of this person who was under attack, Mr. Pickett, and early on, and I haven't seen anything more since that. You know, there were, I think I saw an interview with this young man's parents. And it, for me, it symbolized, again, community coming together, and sort of like there was something about the way this young person was raised in terms of his family and his community, that he felt it was important for him. And, you know, sometimes you have to be young, because he probably didn't think about how far he had to swim to get to this person. And, you know, when he got there, then he took up this man's battle.
Right, right. Which was important, because we haven't said this, but the man who was attacked, Captain Pickett, he was a middle-aged guy. He wasn't in the best of shape. You know, so he was holding his own as best he could, but he was attacked by I think at one time, 4 or 5 men. You know, and so the guy who jumped off of the riverboat, the tour boat, to run to his rescue was a young and strapping guy, you know. And he says, oh, no, this is an unbalanced battle. This is not fair. And there we go with that theme of injustice again.
And which brings me to a point that Corey made, was in terms of where are we when we see things happening. And his question about, you know, here in the Northwest, do people respond in similar ways? How do oppressed community respond when they are under siege? And how do we respond when they respond? Those are just some of the issues that we need to reflect upon in terms of what does it mean to stand for justice. And I think Santiago mentioned in terms of convenient allyship. You know, I'll do something. I can post something on social media and feel good about myself because I posted a meme. But the struggle for justice is at least that, but it's more than that. Certainly, we have to become aware of injustices, but then there comes a point where we have to take action. So we could have been like perhaps other people on that at that ship and just watched this man being attacked by this group of other people. Or are we the type of people who would say we need to take action? And what type of action? What is the proper response? One thing that was troubling to me is, and this is, happens all the time, when something descends into violence,
mm-hmm.
and it takes on a characteristic of itself. And so that the reason why people are there is laws. People are there for many different reasons. And then it becomes problematic about whether or not we are there for the right reason, whatever the right reasons are.
Yes, 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 yes. So in the end, the whole, well, you know, before I get to that, I wanted to say I didn't hear from Corey how the hat signal is so well known.
Yeah. I got her. Where's my hat?
You know, and you being from the north and, you know, or northeast, and me being from the Midwest, that's not part of our, that's not part of our environmental memory, you know, our cultural memory. I know the nod,
but I did not.
Yeah, I don't. That. I don't know the hat signal. Yeah.
So always wear a hat.
Have one in. Hey, do I need a concealed carry for that?
Oh no,
I don't think it would be concealed though. So it would be obvious.
So when you leave your home, make sure you have your hat.
Okay.
And your folding chair.
Okay. Now, what size folding chair?
Oh.
And are the regulations? You know,
right.
Like you must have a regulation number 2.
That's
folding
right.
Chair.
Folding chair.
I don't know. But I mean, I like laughing at it because of it's kind of like lancing a boil. You know, a lot of people want to say it's not racialized. And I kind of question that because of the way the men talked to Captain Pickett. You know, and he himself has said, well, I don't think it's racialized, but if he's like a lot of black people, it's like, I'm not going to draw any undue attention to it. I think it kind of speaks for itself.
Well, yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. And I mentioned someone about privilege. What occurs to me is sort of like these people are privileged, saying that, well, you know, we are going to park here.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you like it or not, because we can. And the arrogance that it takes to resist when someone comes and say, no, you have to move.
Mm-hmm.
And that arrogance is so revealing to me. It's sort of like, I don't care what you say. I can do what I want to do whenever I want to do it. And that, I think, is symbolic of an atmosphere in I was going to say a nation, indeed in our world, where mm-hmm. this narcissism takes place of privilege. And we can see it in terms of our politics, local and national politics and politicians. And as we saw in what happened in Montgomery, Alabama, how people interact in society.
Yes, 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 yes. So, you know, hopefully what we can take away from this as we try to figure out how to navigate some of these dog whistles, some of these overt attacks, some of these in-your-face attacks, is we can figure out not only what are some standards of allyship, as was mentioned earlier, but how to dismantle some of these negative actions, some of these negative systems put in place, and create a way that we can build some bridges. Because again, you know, even though people would say, you know, this is a waste of time, to, you know, this is caricature at its lowest and its worst when people reenacted that, the fact that you had these groups come together and make it a fun play, a cathartic event, because I think that's what Santiago said directly, and what Corey alluded to, is that it was cathartic, you know? I think finding ways to take some of these uglier events that happen and make a cathartic, I don't want to say reenactment, because I'm not going to reduce all positivity to a, you know, a reenactment.
Yeah, but to expand it more, what do you mean by it's cathartic? What does that mean?
You know, well, I don't want to put words in Santiago's mouth, because he said it was cathartic, and I agreed. To me, it was kind of cathartic. For what I'm gathering from hearing people say it, is number one, I think fundamentally a lot of us just don't like bullies.
I see.
We don't like bullies. And so we want to see the bad guy get his, mm-hmm. you know. And then, like I said, even though Captain Pickett has said he did not think it was a racial event, you know, and people said, well, would they have tried to attack you if you were a white man telling them move their boat, you know? And that's moot. We don't know, you know.
Right.
But for a lot of people, it was cathartic in that there was a stand against oppression. And that's something that Corey had mentioned, too.
Okay.
You know.
And cathartic, what do you mean by cathartic?
A release of tension and an opening for healing.
I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to characterize, at least in my view,
okay.
you know, what it was for me. Because mm-hmm. I looked at it, and there was a part of me that was trying to say, you know, that's not how you were raised.
Right, okay, yeah, I know. Because
you know, it was something like, yeah. What? Don't you dare giggle. I better not hear a giggle slip out of you. That's
thank
not
you.
Proper.
That's very helpful, because all along I've been saying, you know, this isn't right.
Right.
And I like how you put it. You know, I can hear that voice in my head. This isn't how you were raised
mm-hmm.
yet. You know, it felt so good in some sense. It's sort of like, as you said, you know, standing up to the bullies. And I think that's a good way of understanding why people responded in the way that we have.
Yeah, because we don't want to, injustice weighs on us. There are some of us who are callous, and there are some of us who are springs of injustice, and that's unfortunate. You know, somebody need to cap that spring. But, you know, we don't like to see people get away with bad things, you know. And then bad folks who do the bad things, they try to traumatize us by calling us snitching. It's like, no, you did something wrong. You don't have a right to get back at me. So my whole thing is, I wish you would, you know. But to bring it back to the positive aspect, it's not that we want to meet violence with violence, but we do like to see folks get their just desserts.
And
I said it like that, folks get they.
And next week we will possibly expand this discussion by saying, what is the proper nonviolent response?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But
yeah. Well, I think the proper nonviolent response is to point to your folding chair holster at your side.
That's it.
just gesture toward it, you know.
Well,
like,
you know,
if you don't start nothing, won't be nothing.
That's right. You know that look that your parents gave you, you know,
oh,
just
yes.
That eye. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, I'm going to say this. Although we're talking from a black experience, we know everybody knows that parental look. You have given it or received it, more likely, mm-hmm. you know. And that look says, I don't even wish you would.
Right. Don't you dare. Don't you even think.
I ain't going to say I wish you would because I ain't tempting you. I'm just telling you, do that, you dead. You know, you know, that look. But, you know, all things haven't been said. I still want to say that even though we don't like bullies, the idea is to try to find that bridge to meet the aggression, the attacks, the hostility with as much nonviolence as possible. And when it's no longer, look and be an ally, you know, to pour oil on those troubled waters.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you for our callers. This has been More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the city, 91.9 in the gorge, 104.3 in the valley. Stay tuned for the Old Mole Variety Hour, and we'll catch you next week.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a full-time development director. This position leads all fundraising campaigns in alignment with KBOO's mission, goals, and policies. The development director works closely with management and staff to identify funding priorities and create major donor campaigns, capital campaigns, and grant writing. More info can be found at kboo.fm/hiring. We will begin reviewing applications on August 7th, and the position will remain open until filled. KBOO is an equal opportunity employer.
Tune in to Pathways, a show featuring conversations with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. Join me, host Paul O'Brien, or my co-host Donald